This is the Off the Break Podcast, your podcast dedicated to current movie theater news, operations, and insights from the people that book the movies. Now, here are your hosts, Cody, Kyle, and Ken.
Welcome back to an all-new August edition of Off the Break Podcast.
Hey, second time's a charm, Ken.
Yeah, good job.
Very funny.
Way to know what month we're in.
Hey, jerks.
We had a take previously where Ken said the wrong month.
Good. I'm glad
you're not getting away from that.
Glad we're going back to this.
Yeah. They made fun of me prior with my.
I had September on the brain. It's literally in the first sentence because we got bad Barbie news.
Bad Barbie news.
Yeah,
it's the only news around Barbie has been good.
Yeah, right.
Up to this point,
it can't be good forever. Unfortunately,
I feel like I was just stabbed from behind with this news.
But it's a familiar stab, right?
It's a theatrical window gut punch.
Yeah. A shank.
Oh, you again.
Yeah. Right between the ribs.
Right on time.
There it is.
So I think if you guys can read between the lines of what we're saying, Barbie will be going to digital at the beginning of September. That means it's going to be available for rental or buying on streaming, or not on streaming services, on digital platforms, but not on streaming services such as like Netflix or Disney Plus or Max.
I'm just glad they're letting us have Labor Day weekend and then they're going to do it.
At least they have the decency.
Thank you for letting us have Barbie through Labor Day weekend exclusive in theaters.
They were really thinking about us, weren't they?
Thanks, yeah. Time Warner. I mean Warner Brothers. I mean Discovery.
Yeah.
I mean Warner Bros. Discovery. I mean Discovery of the Warner Bros.
Yeah. What are we at? Max? Is it Max now?
For Max. Streaming, yes. Such a catchy name.
Yeah.
From Warner Bros. Discovery.
Although last night I was feverishly searching, is Sister Wives going to be on Max now that it's Warner's Discovery? And I don't know. I didn't get a clear answer.
No one knows where everything is.
I know. Yeah, exactly. It is very infuriating. I do not want to add Hulu to my streaming accounts just to have Sister Wives, but I would add Max for it.
I would think they have it because that company was like the
I don't know for sure. It's TLC. Where does TLC live now?
Yeah. That's the thing with these streaming services. Like the average person now has to know about like insider trading or like joint companies merging together. And it's like no one needs to know about business deals. They want to watch Sister Wives.
Or we just sign up for cable TV.
I know that Sister Wives is on TLC. And that should just be a channel number that I go to my TV on. Mm-hmm. This whole app thing is absurd. And I just need season 18 to start this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't care about the movies. I just want my Sister Wives back.
Well, speaking about not caring about the movies, Barbie.
Barbie will be on streaming.
We care about that one. So yeah, that is just some bad news to start off this episode.
Yep.
This news isn't bad or good. It's just okay-ish news.
Are we going to put this in our Sony branded segment about release date changes?
Sure.
I think it has to be. I think this counts.
It falls under that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little spicier version of what Sony usually does.
They're
stepping up their game.
They're stepping up their game in a manner of speaking, I guess. Dumb Money, the movie with all these comedians like Pete Davidson and Nick Offerman.
These comedians like Paul Dano.
Well,
are you kidding me?
I'm thinking
way
more,
to go there. Comedic actors.
I'm thinking more about like the guys I want to see more, like Seth Rogen. And they're all comedians.
No, this one's awesome because Sony like went off the page here. They took a left on a right only and went, instead of changing the release date, they gave this movie 4 release dates?
Yeah. So it was just going to be the one, September 22nd.
Standard
a wide release.
Theater release.
But now they're doing a whole rollout plan through the month of September to where it's going to be released everywhere with a wide theatrical release on October 6th.
In the industry, we call this platforming. Mm-hmm. It's a platform release schedule.
It's like that kind of bed that you just bang your shins on.
Yeah. So they're going to go New York, LA on the 22nd now.
15th.
On the 15th. Then they're going to increase it for their each week until their widest point on 10-6. So.
Yeah. And it seems like on the film buyer's side, you're very positive about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think moving it in the widest point into October is good. If this movie is any good, it will create lots of good word of mouth. And then, because they need to do something with the strikes where they can't have where the actors aren't able to market it. So mm-hmm. they've got to create a word of mouth somehow. And I'm thinking platforming it is a good way to go.
Okay.
Because this is a actor-driven film.
This actor-driven, it's going to be upscale, more of a thinking man's film. It's not going to, you know, appeal to mass commercial audiences right away. So
I think they're going to try and have it feel commercial at the same time, though.
Oh, for sure. I'm not saying it's going to live in the realm of upscale films, but it is more upscale than most films.
Sure. Yeah.
That for probably on a wide release. So I think this is a good move for them.
Do you think if the strike keeps going, then other movies that kind of teeter-totter on commercial but also slightly upscale could follow suit as a way of
if this works, there's a possibility.
You know, Sony is experimenting. They're doing those sneak peek shows for Gran Turismo, trying to drum up business. I'm not sure those are going great. I think they are causing a bit of confusion because
it's sneak peeks on the original release date.
Well, no, this that one week was, and they're on the weekends, and they're just certain shows, so it feels very much like a regular run of a film.
Yeah,
it's really bordering on confusing there. So I do like the more traditional platforming where you're just hitting certain markets. Then they can go out with marketing like, oh, it did so great in this market. The buzz is great.
Then you get reviews and Rotten Tomato scores, and then you can build off of that.
And then you can build off that. So
if it's good. If it's not good, then this just absolutely obliterates a movie.
It does. And this is a real gamble on Sony's part to do this.
Yeah.
Because if this doesn't work and they release it in New York, LA, and the reviews are bad, the next platform is going to be, they're going to want 50 theaters and they're going to get half of those.
Right.
And then the next one, they're going to want 500 and they're going to get half. It's just going to basically bury the movie.
It's going to be lost and forgotten, but before it ever came out.
Versus opening 3,000 screens and having the opportunity to.
Right.
To blow up.
I don't know. If it's bad, trick some people into coming in just like, you don't know what it is. And then, bam, it's bad. Otherwise, people know ahead of time.
Gotcha. It sucks.
I kind of think that's what happened with Indiana Jones in a weird sense. Remember, it did the film festival? It did Con or whatever?
Yeah, I think Tin Can. Yeah.
And then people were like, ooh, this is not good. And then it just kind of pulled all the steam out of the marketing and the momentum for it.
Yeah. I don't even know if that may have been like not the smartest move, but I wonder if that would have happened anyway. Like even if the premiere was, I don't know, a week before that movie and then people heard bad reviews about it, that probably could have happened regardless.
But that's what I'm saying. If it's a bad movie, kind of like Indie, where it was really not that good.
Sure.
That's what happens to it. If it's good, then you build momentum. Maybe like some of like the A24s, like Everything Everywhere All at Once. You know, you really can see what happens when a film is good and it builds momentum from word of mouth.
Maybe. They just have this marketing machine and you're telling them to slow down.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, that doesn't work. You can't have this department with 50 people and tell them like, well, I want to use like three.
I'm kudos to Sony for at least trying. Yeah. I mean, they
didn't just pull it.
Yeah. They're not pulling it. They're not moving it completely to next year. I know they did that with Craven, but Craven's a big movie for them and they really had to protect it. But I'm thankful that they have kept these here and they are trying these different, you know, marketing strategies on it. And it will get to know in real time if it's working or not.
And we know this is a coastal movie anyway.
Yes, so very much a coastal movie.
It's a New York, LA movie anyway. So to get it to open there, get good reviews, and then you can play it everywhere else in between.
Right. Let some more theater owners and audience people hear about it first before we just throw it into the theater. So this should be a good one.
Speaking of trying new things, Disney, instead of buying everything, looks like they're going to start selling a few things.
I've never in my career seen Disney sell anything. They've always purchased. Accumulated. So this is weird.
It has a lot of people spooked.
It's a recession.
But yeah, they just have been making headlines these past few weeks where we're seeing them trying to sell some of their TV channels like ABC or FX, or they're looking at
trying to find the possibility.
Yeah, they're at least exploring it. Same thing goes with ESPN. It looks like they're trying to find partnerships so that way they can not take on the entirety of ESPN, probably so that way they don't have to pay as much, I guess. They've already been laying off staff there. Other headlines and articles I've seen include them people noticing the rising cost of streaming services in the parks, but also the decreasing of attendance and the subscribers on those streaming services. So,
and in the parks.
Yeah, yeah. And within the parks as well. So they just have, something's going on over there
with
Disney.
This is a huge shift just in our industry with about how these media companies make their money.
Mm.
And we are just such a tiny cog in those huge media machines. And it's just really interesting because Disney was the biggest of all these media companies. And so you're really watching the biggest one, the one that had parks, that had TV channels, that had sports, had live sports, it had all this stuff all wrapped in this one company, try to navigate now this direct-to-consumer streaming, which I just think that they've always wanted direct-to-consumer, but now they're realizing, oh, it's just not, we're not making the money we used to.
Yeah, not capturing attention on ourselves either.
And it hasn't been great for the consumer. I mean, if you add all the streaming bundles together or all the streaming services together to get everything you wanted, what you were getting with cable before, you are now paying more than you would have been paying with cable. We have finally hit that threshold over.
I love this. This is the whole Cody's finally come to this understanding, like she doesn't watch TV, but when her shows come in, she's like, what is happening?
I know.
It's so much money.
I rarely watch stuff, but I have my garbage shows that I've always had forever. Sure. And now I'm trying to navigate it, and it's infuriating to me that I can't just be like, oh, I want to watch Channel 36 because it's TLC, and I am finally ready to watch my show now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just looking up the sales price when Disney bought Fox. It was $71 billion.
Yeah.
So that's part of this agreement. ESPN right. is a massive part of this agreement. I didn't look up what that price was, but this is going to be the biggest sale in the history of sales.
If they do it, but I don't think that, you know, everybody assumes it's Apple because Apple is the biggest war chest out there to buy something.
We should probably clarify this because I think we're kind of jumping into this next part of this topic, is that because of all these headlines being made by Disney about them doing the opposite of what they usually do, which is acquire and mm-hmm. produce and repeat, is that people are speculating that Iger is now trying to have an out with Disney in a manner of where Apple could be trying to buy
right.
Disney entirely.
Yeah.
Correct. And if he gets his pull it off, then he's done because they have a CEO already, so they don't need him as a CEO.
And Apple and Disney have had they haven't worked together necessarily, but they've crossed paths within the business world to where maybe it's not out of the realm of just being a complete shock.
I think for mergers, it makes sense because it's a tech company merging with a media company. So that makes sense on that part. They think from, you know, just regulatory standards.
There's an incredible amount of, with ESPN and Disney parks, there's an incredible amount of real estate involved and things like that.
But that's the thing. I don't think
Florida.
But the Apple doesn't need that. They don't need that. They don't want theme parks. Apple wouldn't be buying it for theme parks. So I don't.
You don't think?
No, absolutely not. I don't think that they need. I don't think they need or want or can handle or has the expertise.
I think it'd just be a new distribution center for all the Apple products, like Amazon and Whole Foods. I think this would work out great.
You thought you were going to a small world. Turns out you make the Apple products.
Every time you order a laptop, Goofy delivers it. I like this. I actually like this plan.
Ken, no. We're supposed to not have this happen.
I think Disney's finding that having acquired another studio wasn't necessarily all that. I don't think it was as good as they had thought at the time. Everybody panicked when Fox was for sale. They needed content for these emerging streaming services that back before we knew how, mm-hmm. you know, in hindsight, how we knew it was going to play out. Now Disney's just got a lot of debt and they have a lot of content, but it's not all great content. I mean, there was a reason why Fox wasn't the number one studio at the time.
Yeah. I mean, within our industry, when it comes to helping movie theaters, this was not a good thing to happen because we wanted more studios. We wanted more opportunities, or at least more options for
more competition.
More competition, yeah.
you need more competition, not less. And that's
the less competition thing, which we were kind of afraid of ever since, like, we were first hearing rumblings of the Disney Fox merger. It's just now grown to an extreme to where even that company probably is realizing that they messed up.
Right. So now they're trying to take a step back. Disney only ever had maybe 8 to 10 films a year, and after the Fox merger, that upticked a lot because they had those Fox titles. Now that's starting to wind down, and they want to get back to the 6 to 8 major releases every year.
Yeah, sounds like they want to lower it again.
They do, I think, to create more demand because you're limiting the supply, but
probably not pay as much in cost too.
That only worked when there was no other supply. Now you have a whole nother supply on streaming. So what are you going to limit? You're going to limit 6 major movies, but you're going to keep those same themed movies. I mean, it's not like you're creating new content. Disney doesn't create new. They recycle old. So now they're keeping all their stuff on streaming with 6 major movies. It just, that doesn't feel like lowering the supply. I don't see them increasing any demand. So I'm not sure that that's the best strategy for them moving forward, but that's kind of what they know. So there's just a lot of pieces moving, and it's just interesting how they've made so many headlines recently that we're like, oh, we should add this and talk about this, oh, we should add this, but they've got such a microscope on them because they were so profitable and held in such high regard for so long. But
yeah, anything they did, you just shrugged and you're like, yeah, that checks out, it's Disney. But it's just in the reverse now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting that other studios, I mean, we've complained about this with Universal, for example, that they're now trying to get almost into the same type of strategies that Disney has done. But
yeah, it seems like Universal wants to adopt the strategies Disney was doing 5 years ago.
But they're doing it too late.
Yeah, we've all moved on. We all realize that wasn't the best.
Disney's about to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe literally.
And they still have Universal's playbook where they're like, we're going to release this to streaming on 17 days. And that's, Disney never did that and would never do that because they needed the theatrical relevancy. Yep.
They at least knew that.
Mm-hmm.
They at least knew that. And now I think between Warner's and Paramount, they all realize it. So for Universal to step out and be like, oh no, we're still going to continue the day and date playbook is just eye rolling. You just are infuriated by it. But yeah. We'll have to deal with them when we get there.
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah, obviously nothing has been announced that Apple is going to be purchasing Disney.
Pure speculation in the industry.
But I just think there's a bit more smoke to it than the past couple of years. Because every couple of years, there's always someone being like, I don't know, Apple could do it. And it's like, on what grounds? They just made $2 billion off of Endgame.
Yeah, just because they want... Apple can do it just because they have the money to do it.
Yeah.
And you can justify it a little bit because it's an acquisition of another pretty successful media company. They
love spending the money. They love to rub elbows in Hollywood. Yeah. No, but beyond that, that's not
a reason to do it.
Yeah, that's not exactly a reason.
This is all, like you said, smoke until we get the announcement that Walt Disney has decided to merge with the strategic partner of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
The strategic financial partner.
The way they're buying players and stuff. It's going to be like, oh, this is cheaper than buying a soccer team. This is way easier. Right.
We're not going to be creative partners. We're strategic financial partners.
Yeah.
Take your money. We're not going to take your input.
Sure.
Sure. I think that's how the golf is going right now. We're taking your money. We're not taking your input.
They've got to figure something out before they lose Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, because that's a whole another can of worms. They're going to lose their exclusive trademark rights to Mickey Mouse because it's going to go in the public domain.
So we got the.
I can't think that's going to happen.
It is. It absolutely is.
But like, don't you think Disney would get it?
Why do you think Winnie the Pooh and...
Got that horror movie, yeah.
Well, I mean, sure, but I think Mickey Mouse is like their token.
They already did this once. They already extended the trademark one time for Mickey Mouse.
Oh,
is
that right? Oh, I did not know that.
And now Disney is... the federal government, especially Florida, has fallen out of love with Disney, so they're not going to help this get extended a second time.
Okay.
So this is going to be, you're going to see Mickey Mouse in lots of inappropriate situations moving forward without any.
He could, or Disney could actually, you know, start pulling back the branding for that and just being Disney.
Correct. Well, they're going to have to. They will not own it. And guaranteed, you're going to see Mickey Mouse like experimenting with drugs and.
Oh, no, not Mickey.
Yeah. That nose. He's going to be out there.
What if Mickey was dark and gritty?
Yeah.
I don't know. Depressing?
Yeah, he's going to be like a cop with an alcohol problem. Yeah. Minnie's from the wrong side of the tracks. It's a whole thing.
Or she ends up on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
Oh, sad. Well, I mean, we like talking about Disney. It's fun to speculate about the industry. It's crazy to watch a studio that was on top just struggle.
Yeah.
So, but I think there's a lot of things we can learn about how they're pivoting, how they view consumers, what their goals are. I think that theaters can take a lot from that and, you know, just have an idea of where our industry is going.
Well, yeah, and what they think consumers like and appreciate about their films. And, you know, that's our next topic is the CGI conversation we've been trying to have for several weeks here about Disney relying so heavily on this.
So we've been off in the office just kind of commenting about how it feels like Disney movies have lost their luster a little bit. Like it just doesn't feel as exciting. It feels like they've really missed the mark culturally a little bit with their audience, whether it's tone or content, whatever it is, they're not gaining with their audience the way they used to. It just, I've had a lot of little theaters comment that like they don't trust Disney anymore with the content and stuff. So there's a broken branded trust issue here.
Totally.
And as we explore that, talking about it in the office and stuff, we came to realize we're like, there's also like a quality issue with Disney movies. And you always think they're the highest quality films, right? But
for a time, maybe.
But the conversation started with Oppenheimer, where Christopher Nolan said there were no visual effects in Oppenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was done 100% for real,
right,
on film. And it was like,
and that it really gave it an authentic feel.
Yeah. And I mean, it shows at the box office, but it's also one of those things like, okay, well, is that important? Do other people do that? And we're like, when's the last time Disney did that?
Well, and then we were thinking, what kind of movies does Disney make? They're really good with animated movies.
But they're computer animated.
And I'm like, okay, so let's like, they don't really do original films. Why not? They do these live action franchise films. But even something like Indiana Jones, which traditionally had very authentic special effects, this last one, they de-aged him. They did all this stuff. And
they relied on CG backgrounds quite a bit. The filmmaking, in my opinion, was just static and plain and not lively like, you know, past Indiana Jones movies have been.
Like
that goes with, in my opinion, some other Disney movies as well. It just was a repeated pattern.
Right. So we come to realize, we could not think of a single Disney film that's come out in the last, I don't know, 10 years that did not have
10,
CGI attached to it
we're
in
not,
any
obviously
capacity.
Not counting anything that are the Fox holdovers, the Barbarian,
the not Antlers, the Searchlight stuff. Searchlight
stuff that's
not
been floating around.
Actual Disney films that are distributed and branded under the Disney umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Could not think of one.
Yeah.
Maybe the audience, maybe our listeners could come up with something, but we really struggled to come up with something that didn't have any CGI in it.
I was rewatching the Pirates of the Caribbean movies a few months back, and it just, despite them being almost 20 years old now, they just felt refreshing because there are special effects, there is CGI being included within them, but
they turned to skeletons in the moonlight.
Correct, but it just felt more seamless, and there still was enough of a vision within the filmmaking that it just felt like a movie coming to life. Like, it felt like you were just in on...
Well, they were on a real ship, and that was nice to see.
On a real ship, on real landscapes, just going through the action. You feel attachment to the characters. And there's exceptions for some of the Disney movies lately, but they don't have that same quality to them. And granted, Pirates movies did decrease in quality over time, but in a different way compared to what's happening now, I would say.
I kind of feel like that's what happened with Marvel, too. Like, yeah. Like, if you look at the first phase Marvel movies, like the Iron Man and stuff, yeah, there's obviously CGI, but it's still very gritty, still very much in landscapes. Like, the first Captain America film felt like real sets.
Yeah, and yeah, totally.
He was really in the elements when he was in.
They felt unique from one another.
Yeah, and I just and then you look at Ant-Man in Quantumania, and it just is like felt like a whole completely CGI
like
background
a puddle.
You
yeah.
see
a
these
muddy puddle.
Behind the scenes videos, like just finish rapping, and they take selfies, and everyone's on a green screen, like everything's
right.
green.
With the little balls attached to them, are like, I acted my butt off in this.
Like, you guys didn't go to a park, or
can't even tell it's Paul Rudd.
Yeah,
he walks outside. I don't think you're actually outside though.
And then right. you look at something like Barbie, and they obviously created these big real sets for it. Everything yeah. felt real. Like, they felt like there was really a dream house that she came down off of. Mm-hmm. And I just think that that's kind of what audiences want now. They just are
a little more practical, a little more authentic.
Yeah, the emptiness of just pure special effects. And I do think Disney has a real problem because they haven't greenlit or created anything without that feel.
But why do you guys think they have become that feeling?
I think it's just
so much they're victims of their own success. When you see so much money coming in from this movie, let's make 8 more of this movie. This is the Mattel conversation again.
Yep, it worked once.
It worked once, and then it worked like after they made the 6, they're like, it worked 6 more times. Let's do this 12 more times. Let's do this 18 more times. And it kept working. At a certain time, there's fatigue.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you say something like that, and then Avatar 2 is like the 4th biggest movie of all time. And
but even within that, even with them using majority, obviously, of CGI, it just feels more authentic, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It makes sense in something like Avatar because you have a fantastical world. You can either have real gritty people in this like fantasy world, or you can have fantasy characters in a real world. I think that's I've always felt like movies could do one or the other, but doing both is really hard. Having fantasy characters in a fantasy world is very difficult. That's why I think even in Avatar you still have human characters, because if it was all fantasy, I just think you'd lose the audience. You have nothing to relate to.
Sure. Yeah, I get what you mean with
so
that.
I think for Avatar, you suspend disbelief because even though they're human characters, they're still in this fantasy world. And you can see a fantasy world, but a lot of the other Disney movies take place in our world. And our world should not be fake.
Yeah.
You're telling me Jason Statham can't swim at 26,000 feet below sea level?
I mean, I'm telling you he can't blow out all the air out of his body and pressurize himself at 20,000 feet. Because we know what happens to a mini sub at like 200 feet. We've that's, been that's educated.
Fair. Now we know.
Now we know.
Properly educated on this.
There are computer animation that we can see online of what happens. No, not just, pretty.
Just feels like a victims of their own success in that particular regard. And they have had incredible filmmakers for them that then make these big budget CGI-filled movies that, you know,
I do feel like though
served.
It's an easy way for a studio to tick off a lot of boxes and control a filmmaker and control the film more, if they can then go and say we'll do that in post in CGI or we'll do that or you know you've got to have this. I do just feel like it's a way for them to assert a quality control over the whole thing so it fits branding and it fits tone and it fits company. You don't get too far outside the box.
They certainly have gotten a lot of upcoming independent directors into these big movies, but
it doesn't feel like their own. It doesn't feel like any of their creative, what made them independent or different or new or gave them their own voice is translated at all. Like it could just be any director off the street directing it because it's the studio that's made the movie, not the director.
And I know it flows into the Searchlight category, but I am genuinely excited for this next goal wins from Taika Waititi at Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
because
it looks
it's going
like
to be
one.
Just like a happy movie.
Mm-hmm.
by like a real film director, and we're gonna see what, you know, what, because it was a Disney thing because he was the Thor guy, and they gave him this option to make his own movie through them after the Adolf Hitler swing and a miss.
But it didn't. What, Jojo Rabbit wasn't that big of a miss for that audience, and it still had critical acclaim.
Correct.
It just commercially was.
It's hard. It's hard to make a movie where Hitler is funny.
Yeah. Yes.
Fair point. Not easy to do that
for general audiences.
For general audiences. There you go. Yes. But this one might help out the general audience more, I would say.
About a kid's soccer more team? Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah. More up their alley. But yeah, hopefully, as Disney is going through, you know, the selling spree that they're potentially doing, hopefully they're also going to the drawing board in terms of quality.
A creative look.
Yeah.
Because they're already getting so much backlash on their new Snow White remake, and it just...
Oh, yeah.
It just...
It's so dumb.
It's dumb, but it also is just frustrating. Like, I want to be excited about the movies. I don't want to go through this every time.
Yeah.
And then when we get to that movie in like 2 years, you have to sell it. Like, how do I tell my exhibitor, like, let's be excited about this one?
Not everyone's angry.
You know, we had to do that with Mermaid. And and Mermaid did fine, but it wasn't, it still was a bigger movie than a lot of movies out there. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't have any enthusiasm behind it, and it's just continue on. I do think that Snow White will be very similar to that Mermaid, and audiences are just kind of over the remake versions of things.
It's odd. They seem to be over the remakes, but yet the money is piling in.
And then, yeah, but then it opens to $120 million, and then they get, you know, not the full amount of what they would expect of adulation, but they get some of it.
Yeah,
75% of the adulation they were expecting, and it's like, okay, this is good.
I think
we're happy here.
Maybe what's different is that you get 25% backlash, and we've never had that before.
Yeah,
correct.
And that's annoying.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, I just don't want to hear people complaining about a film anymore.
About a film for children?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Adults should not be complaining about remakes for children's movies.
No.
As much as they're beloved classics, just don't worry about it.
Maybe that's what's really different. So then you feel like the whole thing is a failure because squeaky cog gets the grease or whatever. It's just
sure.
Nailed it.
Squeaky wheel? Squeaky something?
That's okay. We'll get off of this Disney topic. And then in 2 weeks, we get Equalizer 3, where Cody gets to complain about an old action hero again.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy.
He's so old and terrible.
No one wants to see these old, old dinosaurs.
Like, decrepit movements, being like, I'm such an action star.
I mean, it's not like the first Equalizer was smash hit, I think.
It opens to 30 and does 100. First one and two did the same. We looked it up.
Almost exactly the same.
Almost exactly
solid.
The same.
That's perfect.
This
is
not
going
to do that. But you can't take out Denzel and Tom Cruise and Harrison Ford.
Watch me.
Cody, there's not going to be anyone left. We literally have this Hollywood actor problem where there's no leading men. We still need to keep one of them.
Yeah, we get Timothy Camembert or whatever. That's all we get.
Wait for his action movies.
Cabernet, whatever his stupid name is.
Or in November with Dune.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But Dune's awesome, so that's fine.
Lame.
I have Jason Momoa still.
Yeah, well, he is an action star.
Yeah. Yeah.
Timothy Swizzlesticks is not.
Well, okay, that's your best one.
Yeah. He looks like a coffee stirrer with black hair.
So toxic of you. You don't have to be big and huge like Jason Momoa to be an action star.
You've said the same thing.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like you're high. We have 250 episodes that prove that.
I just appreciate it, but there is room to appreciate the slight athletic builds of Timothée Chalamet's out there.
He looks glad like you're coming around.
He looks like an upside-down dirty mop.
I will take him.
I approve.
Over an 80-year-old Harrison Ford. And I cannot believe I'm saying that, but it is just sad to see Grandpa trying to keep it going.
Looks like a feather duster surrounded by fashion models. I don't get it.
Like, Another dust.
It wouldn't be an episode off the break podcast if we didn't make fun of Timothy Chalamet's looks.
Yes.
I don't know. He looks like a wet puddle.
He looks like a wet puddle?
Yeah. He looks like he, yeah, if you stepped on a wet puddle or Timothy Chalamet, you would have no difference.
One of them will just make a sound.
Yeah. The puddle.
Oh, that's a good point.
On that note, bye, everybody.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to Off the Break Podcast. Find us on all podcast platforms or at screeninsider.co. And be sure to like and follow our Facebook and Instagram pages at Off the Break Podcast.